Well, it's Neil coming to you from the studio again with a little audio footnote. During my seminars, the audience usually asks questions that may not pertain directly to the subject at hand, but rather to my books or my experiences. I always allow time for these questions because they tend to be of interest to everyone in attendance. So what follows now is just such a session, included here so that you too may be a little more informed about how the books came about, my personal experience of writing them, and so on. I hope you enjoy this little intermission from the Truth Seminar. Perhaps some questions you've wondered about will be answered here.
I'm curious what you found to be the biggest challenge from all the things that you've written that you found personally to be the biggest challenge for you to do, and all the things that you wrote about.
The biggest challenge for me has been to stop making people wrong. That was always a challenge in my life, even before I knew that I was right about everything. Well, come on, lighten up. I mean, 15 of you laughed and the rest of you went, "My God, he means it." No, I have had, frankly, a problem in my life with self-righteousness. Huge, huge, huge problem. Could have fooled you, right? And then when this information came through to me, the teaching, there's no such thing as right and wrong, really blew me right out of the room. Just blew me right out of the room. There's no such thing as right and wrong. How can I live with that? See, my whole life has been based on rights and wrongs. So that's been the most challenging thing for me, is to get off of my positionality about that. And I haven't met that challenge well. But at least I know now what the challenge is, whereas before I didn't. Yes, over there?
Why do you think you were chosen to hear the voice? What do you make of that for yourself?
Well, you know, I have two realities about that. Number one, I believe and I'm very clear that all of us are chosen, and that all of us are being spoken to by God, by life, by the universe, whatever word you want to put in there, that wisdom is given to all of us, and that God speaks to the hearts of each person all the time. And that it's not a question of to whom God speaks, but who listens. But if you rephrased your question just a bit and said, "Well, Neil, why do you think you turned out to be a particularly good listener?" I think I would answer in this way. I think I would say, I have been given the gift of communication. I somehow had the knack of stringing words together on paper or verbally in a way that made sense to other people. And so I think that the reason that I listened very carefully was because I wanted the communications that I was sending so effectively to the rest of the world to make some sense, to have some importance, to create an impact, to make a difference. I deeply wanted to make a difference in my life. If I had one overriding desire in my life, it was that my life would have made a difference in the lives of others. So I think that's why I chose to listen.
My question pertains to the difference between the dynamic of hearing the tapes versus reading the books. My wife and I were drawn to, or we drew to ourselves, the tapes. Still haven't read your book, but we've listened to all the tapes and we're anxiously awaiting book 3 on tape. But it's a different dynamic in our discussion group between those who have read the book and those who have heard the tape. Those who've read the book seem to express that the voices for God, male and female, are voices that they have to construct in their minds versus hearing an actual voice that represents God, male and female. It makes a completely different picture in their mind's eye as to God speaking to you during that conversation. And in our discussion group, it creates a real interesting group discussion.
Yes. Well, I'm glad about that. I can clear up some of that, though. God does not necessarily sound like Ed Asner. With all due respect to my friend Ed, or Ellen Burstyn. In the actual experience, the voice that I heard, if you please, was what I would call a voiceless voice. It was neither male nor female. It was neither young nor old. It was simply a voiceless voice. It didn't even sound like my own voice, you know, talking to me. It was just a voiceless voice.
Has the dialogue continued since you finished book three?
Yes, the dialogue goes on all the time, and I'm now in the process of writing a fourth book, which will not be another book in the Conversations with God series. But when I finished the first book, I was asked to write this guidebook to book one. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but this is a guidebook to book one, and it's a very wonderful book. It contains exercises and processes. It's a wonderful book. It takes you through book one line by line. When I finished writing this, they asked me to write the acknowledgments. And I recall this vividly. I wrote here in the acknowledgments, for the entirety of my life, and anything good or decent or creative or wonderful I may have done with it, I thank my dearest friend and closest companion, God. I have never known such a wonderful friendship. And as I wrote those words, a chill went up the back of my head. And in that instant when I wrote those words many months ago, it was made clear to me that there were two more books yet to write in this series, and then I would truly be finished. And the two books were these, Friendship with God and Communion with God. And what I was told by my voiceless voice was, Neil, this is how all relationships work. All relationships begin with a conversation. And you have a conversation, and if it goes well, it develops into a friendship. And if that goes well, you begin to experience communion. And so we go from conversation to friendship to communion in our human relationships, and it's exactly the same way in your relationship with me. So, he said, you must now write a book called Friendship with God, which will talk about how to turn this conversational acquaintance you have into a functioning friendship. And after you finish that book, you will write a fifth and final book, Communion with God, which will talk about how to turn that friendship into the true experience of oneness that all relationship seeks and desires. One of the key foundational experiences of life, whether you know it or not, is the experience that we have around the thing we call money. Now, maybe you don't agree that this is a foundational experience in life, but I think you would if I expanded my definition of money to include the exchange of anything for anything else. That which we negotiate and agree that we will exchange with each other could be cows, leather goods, cash, time. Money is a thing around which people have experienced a lot of damage. In fact, there's so much damage around the experience of money that some people would rather discuss anything else with you. They'll talk to you about any other aspect of their experience more easily and more readily and more openly than they will about their experience of money. You can even get details of their sex life more easily than you could get details about their money. Tell me the last five people with whom you had a sexual experience. They'll tell you. How much money do you have in your bank account the past year and a half? What? You want to know what? See, very, very private information. And the reason that it's private information is that we're pretty clear that there's a lot of stuff going on in our society around money. How much people think we have, how much people are aware that we don't have, whatever. And people form thoughts about us. Indeed, we form thoughts about ourselves sometimes around money. So there's been a lot of damage around money or the things of value we exchange with one another for the things of value that we give and receive to and from one another. By the way, someone came up to my wife during the break and said, my husband owes me $16,000. Should I require him to give it to me? Apparently there's some ex-husband. My ex-husband owes me a pile of money. and he's having to maybe sell some property or do something in order to come up with this money for me. Why don't I just call him and just say, all is forgiven. You don't owe me anything. Think I should do that? And my wife said, ask Neil. No, she didn't. She actually gave some pretty good advice. It wasn't as good a punchline, but it was good advice. But I'm just kind of curious, what do you think about that? We've talked now about nobody owes me anything. Why did you shake your head no when I asked, should she call him and say, you don't owe me the money, all is forgiven?
Okay, I don't know the total relationship, obviously. That hasn't been presented.
Sure.
But it seems to me that would have a completion then, one form of completion. And I think completions are important. Another way of having a completion is just say, just forget it. If she isn't at a higher power or higher spiritual area, my guess is then she would feel resentment about just letting go of her power. So I would want her to ask for it and ask for it with assertiveness. And then if it came a point where the getting of it took more energy than the receiving would do any good for her, then I would say at that point, well, just let it go. I don't need this kind of energy, as you said before, you know, this. I don't need it that badly. I want to share something with you. That's my answer for that I'm just making up as I'm going along.
Well,
so I didn't have any answer, really.
You and I are in the same boat?
Right.
It's regrettable that you're doing a better job of it than I am.
One of the things that's happened for me, though, is that my son and I were in a deal together, a financial deal together. And
very dangerous.
Right. And it was more than dangerous for me financially. It was pretty bad. And while the deal was going on, until it was all over, I had too much anger to talk with him and to deal with him. And I'm real clear, 90% clear, that what I intend to do is say, you don't owe me that money anymore. I went into a deal freely, cleanly. I had some certain thoughts about how it was going to be. I think you did. It's over. And a little bit like the letter with the dentist. If by some chance you would choose to give me some money because you would feel better about that, I'll accept it. But I don't need to have that money. My relationship with you is more important than the money. And so I would just let that go now. And I'll say those words to him when I get back to Chicago. So that's a meaningful part that I got out of this workshop. And she should still ask her husband.
I was told an interesting story a couple of days ago. I was in Milwaukee, and I was with some relatives that I hadn't seen in 30 years, 25 or 30 years. And they began to bring up some issues that they still held after now 50 or 60 years with my father and my mother. These people are relatives from my mother's side. Now, the history of it very briefly is that my mother's family was very, very wealthy. And when my mother's parents died, when my mother's father died in particular, he left her and the other children a great deal of money. Not a little money, but a great deal of money. And my mother was married to my father at or near that time. And I found out this past few days something I never knew in the history of my parents. Apparently my father took that money in 2 days and lost it all on the futures market. He was going to be, you know, do some razzmatazz and turn this large sum of money. We're not talking about even 30 or 50,000, something on the order of 300,000. A lot of money. Back, and this is 60 years ago. And lost it in 48 hours on the futures market. And her relatives never forgave him for that, for wanting to be, you know, what they thought was, you know, the big shot, are going to come in and really turn this into a huge fortune and all that, and he was going to play with the big dice and roll the big dice and all that. And so some of that came up in our conversation not in a mean-spirited way, but just kind of remembering some of the stuff that went on. And all I could think of was, isn't it interesting that it took me 50 years to hear that, and I never heard it from my mother? Even when I was old enough to easily have understood. Isn't it interesting that my mother stayed with my father for 43 years until her death and never spoke a word of that? Nor did I ever have any indication in all those years that she had an issue with it, but that she held my father in the place of highest esteem in terms of his personal integrity, and that her dying words were, "Take care of your father. He's a good man." So, some people can let go, and some people cannot. Some people are clear who they are. And my mother was very clear, I am not my money. Nor is my husband the money that he lost. Neither one of those things are true. And you've made essentially the same decision. Essentially, you've decided, my son is not the money that he lost for me. And our relationship is not the money. And that's a huge, huge decision. And it says something about you that's enormous. Well, you know, my own answer to my wife when she said, what do you think is, there's a difference between requiring and allowing. I personally would not require my spouse to give me the money. I would simply allow him to. In other words, I would do nothing to coerce it or force it. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't happen to personally believe in coercing or forcing anything. And I never will. Even small things like, you ever try to call somebody and you call and call and can't reach them, and you've all had, this is a common experience, I bet you've all had it, somewhere around the third or fourth time, if not earlier, you just go, I'm obviously not supposed to talk to that person right now. Because you can sense that there's just a kind of a opposition in the universe to that happening. Have you ever had that experience? Or you're trying to do something and you just feel that, you can't explain it, but it just feels like there's just this something invisible opposing you right now. Maybe tomorrow, maybe this afternoon, maybe just in 10 minutes, but right now it's just opposing you, and you can sense that opposing vibration. And when I feel those opposing energies, I very, very often just go, whoop, I don't need to go there. I don't need to go there. Now, sometimes I get my hackles up, and I feel that opposing energy, and that's exactly when I go there. Oh, really? Watch me. I'll show you. And sometimes I actually defeat the energy and win the day, you know. But I rarely feel good about it. Or sometimes I even feel good about it, but I get so upset in the process that I've destroyed my peace of mind. And sometimes I have won the moment, but I have done so at the expense of the feelings or the sensitivities of another so greatly that I think less of myself in the end. I think that I'm less, I showed up as less than who I really am in those moments.